The following presentation is brought to you by the Pride of ODU, the official NIL collective of Old Dominion Athletics. Be a monarchist. Join the Pride. Monarch Nation, welcome to the Monarchist Podcast. It's another Victory Sunday for Old Dominion football. And another victory week for Old Dominion football. Old Dominion goes to Statesboro and wins 45-10. An absolute ass-kicking in Statesboro. But first, we got to welcome in my co-host as always, Aaron. How are we doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm still trying to adjust to these significant victory margins. That's so many years of close games. Not really sure how to handle this.
I mean, we just got to take it in and appreciate it and enjoy it while it's going on. Because we know the portal is waiting. So you got to enjoy this while we have it. Also, Justice is joining us again. Thank you for joining us today. How are you doing today?
Doing great, man. It's been a long. I don't know, if we've ever had, these margins like this, right? We've had prolific offenses where we've scored a lot, but in those days, we also gave up a lot. So, yeah, it's a nice change to be able to watch a game and not really have to worry about it at the end.
Oh, yeah. The last few weeks, the second half is just it's just going through the motions to get to the end of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I saw it last time. We've outscored our opponents 120-9. Obviously, late in the game, they got a garbage point touchdown, but complete domination yesterday. Rushing game was amazing. 376 yards on the ground, 6.6 yards per carry. We kind of gave you an idea that would happen with Georgia Southern having the worst rush defense in the country. But that really showed out. That it showed up on paper, and it showed up in reality yesterday.
Yeah, since we lost to JMU, ODU has outscored its opponents 133-37.
That's a lot of points.
We're one of only three G5 teams ranked in the top 50 in both offense and defensive efficiency. The other two besides us are South Florida and JMU. Getting it done on both sides of the ball.
Absolutely. I kind of want to start with Devin Roche because we've talked about his kind of how tough this year has been for him and how his resiliency has kind of shown up in games. Gets 7 carries for 51 yards and his first touchdown in a while. It's just good to see him busting it loose. He should have had more touchdowns yesterday, in my opinion. But Bull Hargrove becomes the touchdown vulture and gets 3 yesterday. Including
it's not his fault.
Well, I'm gonna say maybe that
was play calls. Play calls, right?
Well, remember Roche had the wildcat too, and then he fumbled his chance. So maybe that's why he didn't get another opportunity. I don't know, but
yeah, them busting out the wild, what we're calling the wild bull offense, was a really good wrinkle. Obviously, we've had our struggles in the red zone this year. But him running that made it look really smooth. It makes you – it's definitely a good addition to the offense, but it's one maybe I would have liked to see a little bit earlier in the season. Maybe not bust out against a team that's overmatched like Georgia Southern.
You used it when we could have – we needed it earlier in the year probably, or at more critical times, right, when we could have used it.
Yeah, kind of go back to that Liberty game. That would have been a nice thing to use against Liberty. I know we won that game, so ultimately it doesn't matter, but that's a game that should have been a lot more lopsided than it was. But happy for Katravion. He came into the game with 1 touchdown, leaves with 4 rushing touchdowns on the season because he has 3 now, or 3 yesterday.
Yep.
Which has got to put him at the top, right there at the top of the running backs. I mean, probably Colton's probably the only one that has more.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but when we're talking about running backs, Traquan Jones obviously looked really good yesterday, was running really hard, and resulted in 14 carries for 73 yards. Really good to see those two, like him and Roche, kind of just taking the reins at the running back position. But, I mean, it all starts with Colton. Colton was fantastic running the ball yesterday. O-line paving the way. 20 carries for 189 yards. I believe Colton is now the all-time leading quarterback rusher for Old Dominion football in a season.
He is. Yeah, he overtaken. He overtook Thomas DeMarco.
He's got 899 rushing yards on the year, which is a school record. Fantastic. What he can do with his legs has really changed this offense this year, and it shouldn't really – it needs to be appreciated, but I would have liked to see a little bit more success passing the ball yesterday than we had.
So he needs, what, 101 to get to 1,000?
Yeah.
So hopefully he can do it this week.
Part of it is that we just didn't – well, I take that back. We had a number of opportunities that we did not capitalize on. I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
But those missed opportunities passing the game, we took full advantage on the ground. Just complete domination, running the ball down their throats whenever we wanted to. I think they said this is the worst loss in Georgia Southern home history at yes. Paulson Stadium.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My first thought when I saw that on the ESPN last night was, this is payback for Taylor.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's 2 weeks in a row.
Watching out there, Taylor. We got your back, man.
That's like 2 weeks in a row we've done something like that, right? Last week, the first time Troy had ever been shut out in a conference game. And then this week, you know, gets Georgia Southern.
And before this game, I know Georgia Southern fans weren't that happy with Helton, but I don't remember so many fans calling for his head. And that is the one thing I keep seeing today is Clay Helton better not be the coach next week after that.
Well, they have to. They have a matchup for bowl eligibility, right, next week?
They do.
You can't. Yeah, you can't let him go with one game left. I mean, I guess you can, but I don't think that makes sense.
Like, I wonder what they do. Like, if they win next week, will they keep him around for the bowl game, or do you fire him? Or yeah, that'll be
you might you might for the bowl game. You might for the bowl game.
I mean, I think if you are going that direction, even if you make a bowl and you decide to move on, I think you fire him just because you're going to fall behind so many other programs trying to find their new guy. But I don't know. I consider they just gave him an extension last offseason after winning 8 games. It's hard to see them pulling the trigger. It's going to be a very expensive proposition for them to fire him.
Yeah, and it feels like fans like have wanted him gone for a while now. Even when he's been successful, it's just not been enough, right? Like, you know, he seems to kind of get you those 8 wins, but he can't ever get over the hump and lead you to the promised land, so to speak.
And it all starts defensively. I mean, last year we had our way against this team. Pat Conroy had a career day against them. One of those Thursday night matchups we all are going to remember for a long time. And then yesterday we just destroyed them. We took their souls out of them. We made them quit really early. Our defense was hitting hard, flying to the ball. And we were just kind of shutting them down. Whatever they wanted to do, we were just shutting down completely.
What a hit by Colbert yesterday. That was
– oh, my gosh. When you said taking souls, that's all I could think about, and you guys know why. Yes.
Hopefully, Daly Cobb's okay. But, man, that was a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did the fencing position.
Just violent. But, I mean, clean hit.
It was such a violent hit, they had to give him a flag.
That wasn't his flag.
Yeah, they didn't flag him.
Well, they wanted to throw it on him. I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
That hands to the face on the D-lineman.
Yeah, that's what the flag was.
Yeah, Jerome Carter gets another interception.
Almost had two.
Yeah. I can't believe I was ever worried about playing J.C. French, ever. I think last year I was a little worried.
America's still undefeated. Old Dominion still undefeated.
Defeat the French.
Yesterday was a lot of fun, man. We had that watch party. We had a good turnout.
Yep.
A lot of fans happy to support this team and root them on to 8 wins on the year. I know we don't have too much football left with this team, but I've really appreciated how they've played, the tenacity they play with, and how they bounce back after those rough 2 weeks.
Yeah, because they could have folded up shop, right? Like, I mean, for all intents and purposes, losing to JMU, you kind of had a feeling like winning the Sun Belt East is a far-fetched idea at that point, right? But, like, they didn't. Kudos to them for, you know, playing hard each and every week after.
We talked about that after those two games. That next game was so important. Both, I mean, for not only the players, but the coaches and the fans. The fans, I mean, we lose another game. The fan base probably really goes into the doldrums. But following that loss in Huntington to right now, it's a completely different feel. The excitement level, the opportunity to win a ninth game here next week, and then to have, hopefully, we obviously don't know what it will be, but hopefully a nice matchup at a decent bowl game. You know, so they've really capitalized on the opportunity after two rough outings.
Is 2016 the last time we've won 9 or 10 games?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's also the last time we won more than 6 until now. So, yeah, we have 2 special seasons in FBS, and this is one of them. Obviously, next year we'll probably want to build on this and hopefully, you know, get that conference championship or that conference championship berth. But this is a very key point for Old Dominion football to kind of turn that corner and show the Sun Belt East that in the Sun Belt that we can be a very good football team.
And you can't help but think, like, the with the recent recruiting success, that the success of this season's had a big part in that.
Yeah, and I mean, I got to give credit to our recruiting staff and our coaches for what they did last offseason. We've done it throughout the year, but it really shouldn't be overlooked what they were able to do on both sides of the ball to make this a really formidable Monarch team. Obviously, bringing in Trey Brown and Ja'Cory at receiver, bringing in Ryan Joyce at center, bringing in Traquan Jones and Bull Hargrove. I mean, all those guys have had huge moments for Old Dominion football this year on the offensive side.
And we go to the defensive side. The year before.
Yep. And then if we go to the defensive side of the ball, I mean, there's guys all over the place that are making plays in their first year at Old Dominion. Obviously, Jackson Forrest is a huge win. Hunter Malecki was out there balling yesterday. Look at the secondary. Botrus has had a good year. He's been down with injuries, but the Kendre Steiger is just a missile.
Zion, not new, but switching from safety to cornerback, played outstanding.
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of credit needs to go to this staff for putting this roster together and the way they've constructed it. In this portal era shows that they know what they're doing. And they're obviously really good at identifying talent. Because if you look at, like, Ja'Cory and Trey and who we were competing with them for, I don't know if they got the hype that they should have gotten when we signed them.
Yeah, especially Trey. Like, I had heard hype about Ja'Cory, but Trey seemed to be a little more unheralded.
And the kid just produces every game.
And that's so key. That's so key at our level. At the G5, G6 level, whatever. Being able to identify those guys that aren't getting maybe the hype that they should be. Because if they are, there's going to be bigger players that are come down and grab those guys and just be able to, you know, hang some shiny objects at them. But to be able to identify talent before other people do and really be reaching out to them and to build that relationship, and for them to be able to see the vision on how they can take their abilities to the next level. Not only is the school in Norfolk a good fit for them, but obviously football is very important. So to be able to envision themselves achieving and then either getting the eyeballs on them to get a shot to play on Sundays, or maybe to get a shot back at a higher level. But I think multiple guys are proving that they can come here, they're going to get the opportunity, they're going to get developed, and they're going to shine.
Yeah, another guy I can mention, Fred Giles, gets a big sack yesterday. JUCO guy that comes in, and obviously he's producing for us. Really happy for Ricardo, though, because he's one of our favorite interviews we've ever done. Big sack yesterday, having a great senior year. We've talked to the staff and talk about some guys that have been having an impact in the locker room and maybe are less heralded for their play on the field. But Ricardo is one of the guys they mentioned is a huge component to how successful this team is because of what he does in the locker room. Another guy we were told about that is a huge locker room component that's having a positive impact is Griffin Duggan. We haven't seen him on the O-line because our starters have played pretty much every game. We'll see what happens with DeBose after his injury yesterday, but Griffin Duggan apparently is having a huge impact in this locker room and on this team. And that shows you what kind of leadership he has to be able to have an impact like that without being a guy that's playing all the time.
Good to have those guys in the locker room, right?
I mean, it's key because we've seen it in prior years where maybe they didn't have that this level of leadership and this type of, like, I don't know, camaraderie where they're all willing to fight and bring that 1-0 mentality. But this year, clearly, it's happening. It's definitely something that we can build off of. And now we can show, like, hey, it's a lot more fun to win, and we know how to win now, and we can build off of this.
Now, a lot of people have questioned the 1-0 mentality. Is this really a thing? Is it just a cliche? And a lot of the guys were asked, you know, post-game pressers, you know, whatever it is, following especially those two difficult losses right in the middle of the season. And kind of, they all were very strong in their convictions that now we're bought into the 1-0 mentality. We just got to, you know, take the next step. And it showed, because otherwise they would have folded. If you weren't, you could have just said, hey, the season's lost. We can't, you know, we're probably not going to win the Sun Belt East. You know, we're not going to be in the playoffs. But they didn't. You know, and they're firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah. I think, are we even now in the Georgia-Southern rivalry now? 3-3?
We are.
That feels good to say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, not only even, but I feel like we might have the tiebreaker since we dealt them their worst home loss in the entire history of their football program.
Yeah, this season's been fun. Like, how many games we beat someone so bad that they're wanting to fire their staff after the game? It's pretty fun.
Maybe we need to create a graphic, a little like tombstones.
Well, we start back with Pry, right? Obviously, that one went through. Yes. And Coastal, they wanted to fire everybody after we beat them. And then we saw it with Troy last week. Despite the season they're having, we hand them such a beatdown that they were like, all right, we don't think Parker's the guy. And now we're seeing it with Georgia Southern.
Obviously, you know what's interesting on that? How people – and we talked about it. I Justice, you may have mentioned it. Actually, I don't even remember. Might have been you, Mike. Folks were so upset about that with Troy. And we were like, look, Troy actually still has an opportunity to win the Sun Belt West. They don't have to have a whole lot happen. And that's exactly where they are right now.
Yep. Because of an injury to Braxton at Southern Miss.
Well, Braxton played last week or this week, so they did lose. But
the game that was crucial was the game last week where Southern Miss had a chance to kind of sew up the West.
Yeah.
And he didn't play, and they lose the game. So now they're playing next week for the Sun Belt West, right?
Yep.
That's football, right?
I don't know. There's going to be some good Sun Belt watching next week. Oh, yeah. Because you got that game for the West. Then you got Marshall, Georgia Southern playing next week for a chance to make a bowl game. And then you got App State. They play themselves into a position to play for a bowl game now because they beat Marshall yesterday, right?
Yep.
A-State needs a win. Louisiana needs a win. Texas State needs a win. All to get 6 wins.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Hopefully I can watch some of those games after we leave Ballard at 9-3.
There we go.
Yeah, I can't wait. It feels bad. I don't want the season to really end because I like this team a lot. And next week is senior day. A lot of huge guys that have kind of changed the culture around this building at LR Hill that have had a huge impact. Guys that we're going to miss. Guys like Zach Barlev, Stephon DeBose Bourne.
Chris Trinidad.
Yeah, you talk about Chris, a guy that could have left for more money. He had every opportunity to. And he stayed loyal to Old Dominion. I mean, that's what you kind of want out of a guy now. It's a rare thing to see, but we are seeing it.
Yeah, that's a whole nother episode. But I think that's a tool that good coaching staffs are going to have, in addition to obviously being able to bring transfer portal guys in. They're going to have to be able to identify players, not only the players, but players with families that have certain values, where if you can identify that they're going to be happy where they are, they enjoy the environment, the school is a good fit for them, like all these sorts of things that are just important to people other than the money.
Yeah.
And you can create an environment like that and foster a culture. But you got to identify those folks because not everybody is wired that way. And not everybody has a family situation that can necessarily go along with that kind of thing. You know, that they're not in a position to be able to just be comfortable like that and not put pressure, you know, on their student, you know. Well,
you know, it you know, guy, like you said, guys are just going to value different things, right? Like, you know, at the end of the day, if your objective is to get to the NFL, you have to have film. So regardless of if you're the third string guy at Alabama and you're not getting on the field, you're not going to have film out there, right? And so I don't know, like, it really, guys, players have to kind of evaluate what's important, what they want, you know, for their next step.
Don't forget, look at the guys that we have in the league. Guys, we're very early in our FBS time or in our FCS time. So that film is crucial. Like, you could get there.
Yep, they'll find you. But continue down the list of seniors I want to mention that have had an impact on this program. Seth Natala. Obviously, he's been crucial to our success this season. We're a big fan of the Natala family and all that they've done for Old Dominion football. But Seth has been just an ultimate team guy, putting the team first whenever you ask him anything. Ricardo Williams, we already talked about him this episode, but another team first guy. Yeah, we tried to ask him some questions about himself in the summer, and everything came back answers about the team and not him. Like, he literally wouldn't talk about himself without talking about the team first. Like, that's awesome. And it's not normal in a good way.
Yeah. We're losing a lot.
Yeah, but
we lost a lot last year. And you know what? We still have 2 games left. So let's not talk about – we could talk about celebrating the seniors.
Ryan Joyce obviously has been crucial in the O-line at center. He's only been here with us for 1 year, but you can see the impact. And while we're talking about a guy like Ryan Joyce and Stephon DeBose and Zach Barlev, we have to talk about the amazing photo shoot they did at DuMars last week, celebrating this O-line and a landmark location in Norfolk with Dumars. Maybe my favorite thing I've ever seen from Old Dominion as a promotional thing. Having the O-line all together at the best fast food place you're going to get near campus is pretty awesome.
I'm just a little jealous that photo shoot wasn't of all of us with that milkshake.
Right?
They're not interested in a podcast photo shoot, but I'd have been interested in eating some barbecue and having some milkshakes.
I did save the photo of the 5-0 linemen looking like they're about to run a play in front of the landmark Dumars sign all lit up. I think I'm going to have that printed out into a poster. I would also tell ODU football, hey, if you could make these prints available, maybe pick one for each game, you might be able to sell some pretty cool photos to the fan base.
Yeah, that was a great picture.
Yeah. Oh, someone we probably should mention had his first touchdown catch ever yesterday. He's been here battling through injuries and fighting back. Jalen Butler.
That is so hard for me to believe that it's his first.
He's such a good tight end, like great blocker, obviously, but we were hoping to see him have more opportunity as a pass catcher this year coming off the injury, but he's not the one to complain or make excuses. So it's good to see him have that moment and leave the game with a touchdown ball. I just want to make sure everyone, if you are coming to the game next Saturday, please get into the stadium early. This is an opportunity to thank these seniors for the impact they've had on Old Dominion and Old Dominion football. And they deserve that from this fan base as much as possible. All right. I think this is a good time to take a break for Afterglow.
I agree.
Shout out to Josh at Afterglow. Thank you so much for hosting us this season for all the watch parties. Me and Aaron have tried to put our heads together, think about what we could do next with Afterglow. Hopefully we have some announcements in the future, short term, or something to announce in the short term. But for now, thank you, Josh, for being such a great host to us at Afterglow. It's been a lot of fun this year watching this great Monarch team with all of the Monarch fans that show up and get loud for ODU football at Afterglow.
Thanks for the great beer, too.
They got something for everybody.
They do.
Whether you're a beer connoisseur or you're someone, you know, weak like me that prefers something a little sweeter or fruitier. You know,
or if you just love Diet Coke.
That, too. I mean, they got those. You can buy those.
And they got the seltzers and the slushies for the people that don't really like the taste of beer, if they still want to have a drink. But I have one more thought about the senior day. Obviously, this is a little bit different. Well, I don't think we've ever had – we haven't seen this so publicly. With Jason retiring early in the season, I wonder if he gets the chance to be honored along with these other seniors.
I mean, that might depend upon his status to graduate. I'm not sure where that is.
Yeah, I would hope they would offer it to him and then leave it up to him, like let it be his choice.
Yeah, I would assume they would allow him to make that choice. But
yeah,
it does definitely seem like it would be the right thing to do to if he's up for it, to honor him along with these other seniors, considering how much he's done for this university and football program.
And it's interesting that you bring that up. I mean, really, we could see people we don't even expect to see a senior day. You're talking about injuries. Obviously, we don't know anything, but guys who've been out all season with injuries, sometimes guys just make decisions that they can't do it anymore. So you may have guys that have enough credits to actually graduate that aren't seniors by official status that could be honored. So please heed what Mike said earlier. I know a lot of times folks tend to get in late from the tailgating lots, but let's try to make it a point to get into the stadium 15 minutes early. It really means a lot to these guys. So much so that there's actually been social media promos out there. Saw a cool one with Devin after the game, asking folks to come, you know, pack the stadium. And we're 8-3, chance to go 9-3 and go to a great bowl game. It's like, let's be there early and celebrate all these guys.
And it's the Oyster Bowl. Obviously, I think we're going to have pretty good weather. I'm hopeful. I haven't looked at the weather report yet because it's way too early to look at. But I've never had a bad Oyster Bowl. Tailgate's usually the best of the season, I think, because the weather is kind of like that crispy fall. But you also smell oysters roasting on grills throughout the tailgates. You see the Shriners on campus, which is always fun with them and their stupid little cars.
Okay, it is a bit far out, Mike, but I did look. And right now, it looks like it should be nice. It is a high of 45, so dress appropriately. But the sun will be out, and it's a good opportunity to eat and drink some hot and warm things.
Yeah, layers. Pack layers. It's easier to take it off than it is to find something to put on. So, awesome. All right. So, 2 o'clock, we welcome in the struggling Georgia State Panthers. They're 1-10 on the year. They're not having much success really anywhere on the field. We were looking at some numbers before we started this offensively. They're a pretty good passing team, but I think it's kind of more of a impact of how bad they are defensively, and they always have to throw the ball to try to come back in games. So they're averaging 263 yards per game. That's 33rd in the country. Passing the ball, they cannot run the ball. They're 111th in the country, averaging 121 yards per game. Compared to us, we're averaging 230.91. And they're 7th in the country rushing the ball now. That is a significant increase from last week when we were at like 216. Obviously, that success against Georgia Southern had a major impact on those rushing yards. Passing yards, we were 63rd in the country with 236.7. Now, I said Georgia State has good passing yard numbers because of them being down a lot. I think our passing yard numbers could be better if our defense and our rushing game wasn't having such the year that they are. We obviously haven't had to throw that much this year in a lot of games. All right, defensively, it is a nightmare for Georgia State. They're 116th against the pass, 128th against the rush, and 133rd overall for yards per game. They're allowing 452.5 yards per game.
How many FBS football teams are there, guys?
136? Yeah, 136.
So from a rushing yards allowed perspective, they're almost at the bottom.
Yeah. They're almost at the bottom in every defense.
So they're like 7th from the bottom, and we're 7th from the top.
Correct. And our defensive numbers are pretty good. We're 25th against the pass, 72nd against the rush, and 40th overall. So you're talking about a team who they're not moving the ball well on the ground. They can't stop anything defensively. We're a pretty efficient offense, whether we're passing or running. Projecting where we're going to dominate in this game is hard. Like, we knew last week we would run down Georgia Southern's throats, right? And it was obviously the easier path to victory. This week, we have all of our options are on the table.
Yeah,
we can either throw it just bomb it on them all game long, or we can run it down their throats. It's going to be very interesting to see how it goes. Obviously, I think running the ball is a smarter option because it takes you get holds, other like interceptions, little things that can kind of mess up your passing game, right? Running the ball is just so much easier if the team you're playing against can't stop the run. So I bet we run the ball a lot in this game and have our way with Georgia State.
It'd be cool.
We've run the ball. Go ahead, Justice.
I was just saying it'd be cool to see Colton get to 1,000 yards. That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, it's within the realm of possibility for sure. We've run the ball for, more than 350 yards each of the last 2 weeks. I know last week I said, that's not likely to happen again. Oh, shoot. I'm going to ask you guys. Will we run the ball for plus or minus 350 this week?
Man.
I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit lower this week just because we're probably going to have more success passing the ball.
I'd say it's going to be 300 if I had to guess.
I can see Trey Brown and Ja'Cory having big days or even AR. Like, those guys are the type of guys where if you just get the ball to them on the slant open, they can take it to the house. Yeah. So you're going to see more plays like that this week, I think, which will maybe balance out the rushing, the passing this week. Maybe we'll get 250 of each. That seems pretty reasonable to expect. But it's also crazy to say, like, yeah, expect us to have 500 yards off offense and not be crazy when you say it. But, again, looking at this matchup, they can't pass block. They're not a good run-blocking team. Defensively, their numbers don't look terrible defensively, but we already talked about the yards. They're giving up a lot of yards per game. Like, we should have fun moving the ball against this team.
Yeah, I was looking to see in the stats if they have a tendency in terms of receivers, if it's a slot guy or outside, or maybe it's just both.
Well, we can look at this is their defense versus our offense. Again, we talked about this last week. The yellow is not a great color or whatever that is. It's like a light – it's just not much green on this defense.
That is very true.
It looks like they're better against the slot receivers than they are the outside guys.
And our outside guys are pretty darn good.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'd also say their D-line shows some opportunities for our running game. But I'm more excited about this matchup. Because this is ugly. Ugly.
Well, depends on what side you're looking at.
I was looking at their O-line.
That right line, tackle, man. Oof.
That's ugly. I don't think we've seen red on an O lineman all year.
Chris Trinidad's gonna eat, man. especially if there's no Cam Brown. If Vayer's the starting quarterback, he's kind of a statue. Chris Trinidad should have a big day.
Man.
Yeah. Their receiver, I mean, Ted Hurst is one of the best receivers in the conference, and we should at least mention that. He's a very good talent at receiver. But other than him, there's not a whole lot to be excited about on their offense for Georgia State.
And Ted might not play. He played, I think he got hurt earlier in practice last week. They gave it a go. He only played 10 snaps, and the coaching staff said, hey, we've seen enough. So I'm assuming his status could be questionable for this week.
Yeah, I mean, Ted has the potential to maybe play on Sundays. So is it really worth it for him to be kind of banged up and go through a game where he could make a slight like kind of injury into a major one? I wouldn't say that's worth the risk for him.
Yeah, looking at going back to – I know we already turned a page, but going back to our offense versus their defense – they play mostly zone. Trey Brown and Ja'Cory both had really good seasons against zone defense.
Yeah, and you look at that the right side where they have Trey Brown lined up. Him getting switched into his zone, I mean, we've talked about it. He could have big days burning safeties that aren't really prepared to keep up with him.
Yeah.
Obviously, on the side Ja'Cory's lined up on, the side that Ja'Cory's lined up on, I would feel better about for Georgia State because it looks like that safety is having a pretty good year. But you're talking about the slot outside, like shorter passes, that might be where Ja'Cory can have his day, like in the intermediate range. We saw a lot of opportunities yesterday in the intermediate that just kind of weren't, they weren't really on the same page. Maybe the ball is a little high, but we could see that this week. I mean, I think this is going to be very similar to last week, but more success in the air. All right, so Justice kind of hinted at it with the quarterback situation. We don't know who they're going to play. TJ Finley has been removed from the team, but we have him here because he has started games in recent weeks, and he was their starter for a lot of the season. Cameron Brown is, in Justice's opinion, their best quarterback. He's their most mobile quarterback, which we know mobile quarterbacks can give us fits. And then there's Christian Vieira. We saw him last year against Old Dominion. He did not play that well last year. It seemed like Georgia State really didn't come alive until, was it Zach Gibson came in and started making plays with his feet and through the air.
Yeah.
That game was much closer. That game was much closer than it should have been last year.
Yeah.
I don't think it really matters this week.
I don't think it matters. I think we're going to win regardless. But if they don't have Cam Brown, I just think it's going to be even worse than maybe it would be if he was there.
Yeah.
Like, at least he gives them another dimension that the other quarterbacks just don't offer.
So, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, we talk about this every week. Pressure, 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 pressure. And our D-line this year has done a good job of getting pressure. But Cam Brown, the guy that Justice is most worried about, 45% of his passes are completed when he's receiving pressure. That's a winning combination for Old Dominion. If they can create pressure on Cam Brown, that number gets even worse for Christian Vieira. Is that it's 18% that he's completing under pressure.
Yeah. Vieira is a very good quarterback if he has time. If you can pressure him, as we saw last year, he is not good at all. And he can't escape either. So, yeah, I mean, that's – if Vieira is a quarterback, man, like, we could have a potential another shutout game going, I think.
He doesn't appear to be playing that well when the pocket's clean either this year. He's better, obviously, when it's clean, but he's only completing 53.8% of his passes when the pocket is clean. That's not great. Obviously, his number – he hasn't played that much this year, but he has played in recent weeks. I don't know. I think they'll probably try to run the ball on us, and it will be to their detriment because we have been very good against the run this season.
Yeah, it's I'd say if Cam Brown is out, probably the one guy on offense other than like a Ted Hurst, who everybody knows about, who's played really well lately, they have a true freshman tight end, Grant Hollier, and he's played really well lately, so he'd be someone to watch out for, other than, you know, the big name Ted Hurst.
So
we've been able to get up on teams lately, and like you said, Mike, it's likely that they try to run the ball, but realistically, how long can you do that? If you get down 2 touchdowns in the first quarter, like happened yesterday, a lot of times you're going to have to quickly abandon what you thought, and they've shown that they've given up a lot of points. I mean, here are the amount of points that they've given up this season. 63, 38, 21, 70. Only gave up 14 to JMU. They kind of played well on defense in that game. 41, 41, 38, 40, 30, 31. They give up a lot of points. And I see no reason why they are going to not give up a lot of points this week. I mean, the trend that's going with our squads, you know, our squad is there. They've been pretty efficient on offense, so I think this could get ugly pretty quickly.
It's why I kind of mentioned that they need to run the ball. They need to shorten this game up as much as possible and limit their our opportunities on offense because their defense is struggling so much. They need to focus on running the ball against us. If they can have success there, it could be kind of an uglier mess like that JMU game was for them. I believe Alonzo Barnett wasn't his best against Georgia State, and it kind of led to that really close game for them. And ultimately, it didn't really matter because JMU still won. But that is their chance to keep this a close game, and it's kind of what they did last year against us. I think we struggled offensively. But these are two very different teams that are facing off this year. This is a Georgia State team who's probably packed it in for the year. Looks like it with their results. And an Old Dominion team who seems to get better each week. I'm expecting, like you said, Aaron, we should have fun this week. Vegas has the line opening up at 23.5 in Old Dominion's favor.
Oh, my God.
By the way, it's already moved to 24.5.
Just while you were talking?
Oh, no. Before it really opened. Yeah, Vegas expects us to rout this team.
And we should. I mean, based on everything's in our favor to do it, right? I see, you know, you got senior day, you got guys last game. You know, the defense has played phenomenal the last several weeks. Like you said, Georgia State's pretty much packed it in for the year. They're not a good team. Yeah, I see no reason it shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and I think about Del McGee. I thought he was a pretty good hire when they brought him in. He obviously got put in a tough position when he was hired in the cycle. And we've seen he's been able to recruit the high school level pretty well, actually. But obviously, with the way the portal and NIL works now, you need to be able to bring in older players that can produce earlier. And that just hasn't happened for them. Old Dominion football should be a fun game on Saturday to close out the 2025 season at home.
Should be. Next time we talk, we should be 9-3 and trying to think about what bowl game is going to be offered.
I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens because if JMU wins out and they end up winning the Sun Belt, and they get a college football playoff appearance, that opens up our bowl opportunities even more.
So are we cheering for JMU or are we not cheering for JMU?
I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough for them to get it.
All right. Let's answer Aaron's question first. So, Justice, give me a reason why we should be rooting for JMU to make the playoff.
Well, probably a primary reason would be financially, right? From a financial perspective, it's good for the Sun Belt. That money gets shared throughout the conference, and so Old Dominion would get a share of that.
All right, and I'll give you my reason why we should not be rooting for them. Obviously, if you're Sun Belt first, I get it. You want the money. Everyone gets a little bit. It's good for the conference because it shows the rest of the country Sun Belt teams can play at this level, depending on how they perform in the playoff. But for me, from a recruiting standpoint, we'd have to be recruiting against a team that made the playoff for the foreseeable future. That will be something they can claim every year. You can come here and play in the playoff. That's a hard thing to recruit against. And it's already hard enough recruiting against a school with the success they've had over the last decade and since joining the Sun Belt.
I don't even know how much money it is. Like a quick search says if a Sun Belt team makes it to the college football playoff semifinals, the conference receives $6 million. That would be the semifinals. How it's distributed within the conference. So, I mean, we might get like $100,000.
And that's paid out over. And that's paid out over multiple years, I believe. Kind of like
the NCAA tournament. Yeah, I don't know if the two of them are alike or not.
All right, so I did the estimate. Well, each team will get $4 million for each game they play in and $3 million to cover their expenses. So $4 million divided by the whole conference, and JMU probably gets a fatter part of that $4 million.
You would think so. Let's say it was split evenly, which wouldn't make sense. But if it was split evenly, say $4 million divided by, what, 16 teams? Or 15 because one's leaving? You're talking about 300 grand?
Yeah.
Is it worth it? Is it worth it to have JMU win for $300,000?
No, I get
I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I think the really only argument for rooting for them to make it would be for legitimizing the conference as one of the best in G5 or G6. Because I think once one team makes it, the likelihood of another team making it next year probably increases.
I just think it's going to be extremely difficult for them. My assumption is in the American, it's going to be Tulane versus North Texas. Committee already views Tulane above James Madison. And I think if North Texas beats Tulane, they will jump James Madison as well. So I just don't.
Now, is there a chance that the ACC is so bad that maybe there could be two G6 teams in the playoffs?
Well, what's the latest college football playoff rankings? Let's see. Miami's not going to make the ACC championship game. Georgia Tech, after their loss yesterday, is probably out. Virginia is in the driver's seat. So, yeah, it's possible. It's possible. You know,
I think we need a lot of chaos in the last week in the SEC.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because you would need Tulane to jump Mizzou, Tennessee, and Texas to kind of make that a possibility, I think, right?
Well, really all you need is JMU to be higher than whoever wins the ACC. So we would need Virginia to probably – well, I don't know who comes in after Virginia. You probably want Virginia to make it, and then you want them to lose the championship. I think right now the ACC is probably looking like Pitt versus Virginia would be my guess. Virginia is already ranked 19th, even though I don't think they're the 19th best team. So it's going to be tough. Is it possible? Sure. But it's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah, I will add, it's been really annoying to see all these national talking heads try to argue for G5s not to even make the playoff.
Which is just ridiculous, in my opinion. The point they always make, which to me is an asinine point, sorry for my language, but that a G5 is never going to win two or three games. Okay, there's P4 teams that are going to make it. They aren't going to have a hope of winning two or three games either. But, like, I just feel like last year, I mean, we didn't get to see Boise State in the first round because of the way it was set up. But there was no question in my mind, like, Boise State was better than several of the, quote, power teams that made it last year. So I just think that's just, like, you know, that's just a bad take, in my opinion.
Systemic challenges, man.
Yes.
I mean, the coaches. Now, we could argue whether who's actually, you know, which coach is actually doing it.
Right.
The head coach doing it, or is the first-year intern doing it for the head coach? But, I mean, the coaches' polls got, at least last week, I don't think the new ones have come out yet, but no. JMU ahead of North Texas, Houston, and Tulane. So I would say that would be more representative than the AP.
Yeah, and they have Virginia, what, two spots ahead of JMU? Pittsburgh is not ranked.
Three spots.
So,
and then Miami at 15.
Yeah, but see, Miami can't win the ACC. I mean, shouldn't say they can't. They can still potentially make the ACC championship game, but it's very hard for them or Georgia Tech now, who are the two highest ranked ACC teams, to make it. I think earlier I said I think it was Virginia and Pitt. I that's wrong. It's Virginia and SMU are the two that are in the lead for the ACC championship game.
And SMU is proof that a G5 program can, you know, compete at that level.
Right.
That's a G5 program with mucho dinero, though.
It is, but, I mean, they recently made that transition, and they're paying to be in the ACC. So it's not like all that extra cash is flowing to them now. They're actually paying out the nose to be in that ACC. But their instant success in the ACC is proof that good G5 teams can compete with ACC opponents. You could say the same thing for like a Houston or Cincinnati in the Big 12.
Yeah.
I mean, the Big 12 has a bunch of examples of G5s instantly coming in and competing with that league. You could go back to TCU as well, you know. It's just funny to me, like, we have all these examples of G5 teams moving up to that P5, PC, or whatever the Power 4 is now. Is it 2? I don't know. But we have all these examples of teams moving up to that level and instantly competing, and they still want to act like they can't compete. They want to throw out, like, these blowout games that have happened, like the Liberty when they made the playoff. Like, yeah, they got blown out, but P4 teams get blown out in the playoff.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's protecting the brand. Like, look who ESPN wants to protect the brands, right? Like, and the Power Four are the brands in this case. And so all those talking heads, that's what they want to do. It's all self-preservation.
Well, that, and who airs the college football playoff?
ESPN.
Right.
Disney.
And then Disney. Disney. So they also have the SEC network. But on top of that, they are a television network.
Right.
They are worried about ratings. If you have a team like Texas Tech playing like a Big Ten opponent, that's probably going to do better than they're playing a G5, right?
Yep.
So why should we listen to them on anything when they have the bias of ratings behind them?
No different than Major League Baseball not wanting the Pittsburgh Pirates to be in the World Series. As opposed to the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Mets or any of those. Lots of eyeballs.
Yeah. And that clouds their actual judgment on a lot of this stuff. The more SEC teams that make the tournament, the more Big Ten teams that make the tournament, ultimately is good for ESPN. Teams on ESPN Plus are not helping their bottom line. I mean, it's pretty simple to see where the bias is coming from and what's driving it. And it's not reality or any of that. It's just ratings. All right.
So well, did we decide whether we're cheering for JMU or not?
Well, I think we gave everyone an example of why they could or shouldn't.
Yeah.
Personally, I think the recruiting advantages of a rival making that big of a stage would be more detrimental than the cash and the bonuses to the Sun Belt that would bring.
Well, if you're still with us after almost an hour, drop what you think in the comments. Are we cheering? Are we not? And why?
I was trying to look up the ratings from last year just to kind of see what where the Boise State game ranked, but I haven't been able to find it yet.
And Boise State's a little bit different. I mean, they've been playing on the national stage for like 20 years now. I don't know if you would group them with the rest of the G5 because they're a little bit different of a program.
And when we travel to JMU next, do we want to see that flag or that banner? Because you know there will be one.
Yeah, I don't know. The other thing that comes into mind is if they do make it, it means it's more likely for when we have a season like this eventually that we'll make it.
Yep.
I think that is a valid argument as well.
And the other thing is, do we want to root against our rivals to fail? Or do we want to beat our rivals when they're at their best? I guess it's going to be a personal decision by most people. So we'll leave it at that. But we'd love to hear your feedback on whether you're rooting for them or against them to make the game. I will say this. I want the best team from the G5 picked.
Yes.
And if they have the best resume, they should be picked.
Absolutely.
But right now, I mean, it's easy to see why Tulane or North Texas might get that nod, especially if North Texas plays with Tulane in their ACC championship game and beats them. I would argue that that is a very impressive win, and maybe they have the better resume at that point.
Yeah. Well, and they have a common opponent in Washington State, where North Texas blew Washington State out. JMU did not blow them out. So.
Yeah, and I know we talked about it briefly at some point this last week, Justice, the three of us. Washington State recently had a quarterback change, and they've been playing better football since then, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, common opponent, yeah, but not the same kind of dynamics at play.
Sure.
A lot of variables.
But the lack of respect that G5 gets in general, you wonder if, like, the committees, like, would even, like, I mean, obviously they're going to know that information, but they're going to spend it how they want to spend it, right? So,
yeah, I will add that it has been interesting to see all these JMU fans start to cape for Old Dominion and how good of a year we've had, because we are their best win now.
Yes,
it's a weird dynamic for them going from telling us how bad we are and how much we suck to then reminding everyone how good we are this year.
There were a lot of posts.
Yeah.
That being said, there were a lot of Marshall posts after, too. Where are they at now?
Yeah.
We love you, Russ.
I can tell you.
I can tell you
where Marshall is. They're headed to a game where they have to win.
To make a bowl game. Yeah.
With about four other Sun Belt teams.
A position that Old Dominion is very well accustomed to.
Absolutely. Yeah, right now, I was going to look real quick. There's only, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's only 5 eligible teams in the Sun Belt. And then we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, another 6 with 5 wins.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what that final number is, because I don't know who's playing who. And I'm not looking at the schedule right now.
And the beautiful thing is we have 8 wins, and we don't have to worry about being left out.
We know Marshall and Georgia Southern are playing each other. App's playing Arkansas State. So that's another win and be bowl eligible game. And then let's see. Texas State's playing South Alabama. South Alabama cannot get to bowl eligibility. And the Cajuns are playing
ULM.
So, yeah. So we got two matchups where it's win and get bowl eligible.
And the most interesting matchup of the week, I'll reiterate, Troy Southern Miss for a chance to go to the Sun Belt championship game.
Yeah,
I think if you're going to pick any other Sun Belt game to watch this week, it would be that one. But you'll be at Ballard rooting on the Monarchs, because that game starts at 3:30. It really sucks that some of these games are not staggered, so we'd have a chance to watch our conference mates battle for these kind of games. Because Georgia Southern Marshall, it kicks off at 1:30. So we're going to have to just watch that on ESPN Plus as a replay if we want to see how that game went. It would have been nice to see games at 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, so we could have a chance to see how these games kind of played out. It feels like that would have been better for our ratings as a conference, but what do I know? But JMU at Coastal at 3:45. It's about that and the Troy game are the only ones we'll have a chance to watch the end of.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Coastal, their star quarterback's probably still likely out for that game. I think there is some hope that he might be able to return for a bowl game for them, but he's supposed to be out for this week, so that's a bummer.
We'll see. Monarchs, thank you so much for tuning in today to the Monarchist. Get to Ballard early. Help celebrate these seniors and send them off on a great note. Thanks again for tuning in. Thanks for everyone that came to the watch party. Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Yeah.